Hey, Leading Learning listener, if improving as a learning business professional is one of your goals for 2026, make sure to go to leadinglearning.com/summit.
The Learning Business Summit is the only event laser-focused on professionals who lead and work in market-facing businesses that serve adult learners. Across 3 days online, you'll connect with peers and experts to strengthen both your knowledge and your network.
Featuring hands-on practitioners and subject matter experts, the live education sessions are designed for participation, reflection, and, most importantly, action to boost the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business.
And because leveraging technology is essential for any learning business, the summit also includes demos of LearnTech platforms.
It all happens online January 27th, 28th, and 29th. Go to leadinglearning.com/summit to get all the details and join us for the Learning Business Summit.
Now, on with the episode.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Leading Learning Podcast. In this episode, Jeff talks with Dr. Brian McGowan, and I want to say a few more things about him in just a minute. But first, because Brian is going to be participating in learning technology design, I want to make sure that you are all aware of that event. It's coming up May 18th and 19th in Arlington, Virginia. This is a learning experience designed specifically for professionals in the business of continuing education and professional development. And the goal of the event is to help the folks that will come together there find new and better ways to engage learners and create lasting impact through the effective use of technology. As I mentioned, Brian is going to be part of that. We also have most of the program up at the event website, ltd.leadinglearning.com. So I encourage you to check out all those sessions and topics. We're going to have people addressing things like digital badges and micro-learning. We'll also be getting into some deeper sessions around things like instructional design and learning technology strategy. So we're really excited about the program that we've put together, and you can find out more about those sessions and the speaker facilitators behind them at ltd.leadinglearning.com. Now, Jeff, you had a chance to talk with Dr. Brian McGowan.
I did, and I was very excited to talk with Brian, both because he is part of LTD and also because, I mean, you know, out of anybody I know, he probably reflects the spirit behind an event like learning technology and design. We talk about, you know, wanting to create a lasting impact through the effective use of technology, and I think that is really what Brian is all about. We talk specifically about the topic of flipped learning, which is you know, kind of like our last episode around digital badges. It's one of those areas that organizations are really interested in, but don't necessarily know how to go about how to make it a reality. Or they go about it in such a loose way that it doesn't really have the impact. It's really not effective. Brian is one of those people who's just really focused on data and making sure you actually understand whether you're being effective and whether you're having an impact or not. And he's applied that perspective to the concept of flipped learning. And flipped learning, of course, is the idea that you've got, you know, some content, some experiences that learners engage in before they ever get into a classroom situation. So it helps to kind of level the playing field, level the knowledge field, so to speak, and raise the quality of what's possible in the classroom situation. And he's, you know, one of the few people I've met who has actively implemented flipped learning with a number of organizations and has had a data-driven strategy around that so that he knows, you know, whether it's been effective or not, whether it's had any impact or not. So we dig into that into this podcast episode. It's something he's also going to be talking about at Learning Technology Design. So if you're interested in flipped learning at all, coming and hearing Brian speak, you know, and you know, if you're lucky, pulling him off to the side and picking his brain even a little bit more, fantastic opportunity. But just in the context of this podcast, I think you're going to get some great perspectives on flipped learning.
Well, that sounds really interesting, and I know I've heard Brian talk a little bit about his experience with flipped learning and some of the data that he shared, and so I know that this will be a great conversation. So let's go take a listen to that.
This is Jeff Cobb with the Leading Learning Podcast, and I am really happy today to be talking with Dr. Brian McGowan. And we're going to have a conversation primarily about flipped learning today, which is a hot topic out there and something that Brian is going to be talking about at the upcoming Learning Technology Design event that we'll be holding in Arlington. So Brian, first of all, I'm going to say welcome, and then I'm going to ask you to tell folks who you are and what you do.
Sure. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Brian McGowan, as you mentioned, I'm the Chief Learning Officer at Archimedics. And for the better part of the last 15 years since leaving academia, I've been focusing on continuing education and performance change in healthcare.
Well, great. And I've been tracking your work for quite a while. I can't remember exactly when we connected. It's been quite a while back. And, you know, it's one of those things where we shoot each other an email every once in a while and sort of tune into to what each other are doing. And at some point, I tuned into the fact that you were really doing some serious work around this concept of flipped learning, which, as I said, is, you know, kind of a hot topic out there, something a lot of people have been looking at and sort of scratching their head and saying, you know, what do we do with this? And you're somebody who, along with your clients, actually has been doing something with it. So I want to dig into that. But maybe as a starting point, I'm using that term flipped learning. I'm going to make the assumption that most people listening to the podcast have at least heard the term, but it'd be good to put some flesh around it, some definition around it. How do you define that term, flipped learning?
Sure. So we're trying to standardize or level set the learning population to make it as homogeneous as possible so that we can use the very expensive and very critical face-to-face time as effectively as possible. So that can be done in literally thousands of ways. But we ultimately want to know when people are standing in front of us or seated in front of us in those face-to-face workshops that we're ready to start applying and digging in deeply. So anything we can do prior to that face-to-face time to get all of those learners on an equal playing field and learn as much about those learners as possible before they walk into that workshop, the better.
And so, and you know, just indicated that could be thousands of ways to do that. I think probably the one folks think of most readily, or that's been, you know, most popularized, is doing some sort of video ahead of time to convey some information. But it could be articles, it could be a live webinar, you know, any number of things. So what are some things that you know that you have done, you know, specific flipped learning type scenarios where you've given folks information, knowledge, learning experiences prior to bringing them together in a classroom? And, you know, that, how well has that worked?
It's worked really well when implemented well, but let me state a bias up front.
Okay.
That my interest in flipped learning is largely, if not entirely, based in my interest around data-driven learning.
Ah, okay.
And right. So my approach for the better part of the last decade has been to see what types of data we can generate from learners, from learning, real data that accurately depicts who they are, what they know, what they do, and where their challenges lie. And when I first started playing with the idea of a flipped classroom 5 or 6 years ago, I saw it as a blended, sequential learning model that allowed us to learn something about the learners early on. So about the end, in the follow-on interventions, I knew who Jeff was, I knew what Jeff knew, I knew what Jeff did, and I knew what Jeff's barriers were. And because of the data that I generated from interacting or teaching or instructing him before, did I know enough about Jeff at the end that I could help him apply very practical things in very efficient ways. If it wasn't for the data, then I'm giving him some stuff to do, and then he's sitting in front of me or standing in front of me a month or 2 months later, and he may know a little bit more. He may be a little bit more prepared before he's in front of me, but I don't know anything about him. So the flipped model really has two critical components. You want to provide the learners with information that allows them to prepare, but you have to provide that information to the learners in a way that allows you as an educator to learn more and to prepare. And when I say there's literally thousands of ways to do it, I don't mean that there's thousands of effective ways to
right,
do it.
Right.
I mean, there's thousands of ways I've seen it done, and you listed a few of them, like just giving them some selected readings to do beforehand does not meet my definition of a flipped classroom.
Interesting. And I think, you know, when we started this off, I said, you know, you were one of the few people I know who's really been serious about this. And it is that data side of things that prompted that comment from me, because you have taken great care in the pre-experiences that you provided, as you said, to make sure you understood the level that people were coming from initially and what kind of change you were actually creating with the learning experience, because fundamentally learning is about change. And, you know, if you're the educator, you want to see that change. Now, I know one place specifically that you've done this work and you've written it up, and in fact we'll make sure we link to articles on it, because you provide some of this data and you describe the experience, but with the American Nurses Credentialing Center, you've done some specific work with them around an annual gathering that they have. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what you did there, what kind of data came out of that, what you learned and what they learned from the experience?
Sure. So this originates back in 2013. The first version of this was 2014, and subsequently we ran it again at a different meeting in 2015. So we have four, soon to be five, different experiences running these flipped classrooms. They are often held as a pre-conference before the annual meeting of some group, whether it's the ANCC or whether it's the Alliance for Continuing Education in Health Professions. At times they've been paid a paid workshop. So I think I know one of the goals, one of the services you provide to your members is that you help them understand the opportunities in both value and revenue for their association. So mm-hmm. We could have that discussion. I think it's maybe a little bit off topic, but there have been times where it's been lucrative for the associations, for sure. I'm not sure that's how I define success, but it may be for some of the listeners. So what we did in each case was we wrangled a number of subject matter experts, someplace between seven or nine of them. I helped serve as a general contractor and architect, and we built a curriculum of online activities. They were someplace between 8 and 12 minutes each in duration. I will disclose that each time we've run this in a specific proprietary e-learning platform that's been built to collect different types of data, but I don't necessarily think it takes away from the rest of the story that we can tell about the experience. In essence, we had three or four occasions where more than 100 learners, about 120 learners who were going to be participating in a live workshop, had between 4 and 5 weeks of access to an online curriculum. The online curriculum were short videos. There were between 8 and 12 activities in this curriculum. And the learners had the ability to go and interact and consume this content anytime over the 4 or 5 weeks leading up to that workshop. We communicated, one of the first lessons we learned was that communicating frequently and reminding this audience of the structure. Don't forget, Jeff, that there's this series of activities with Dr. Mm-hmm. McGowan and Dr. Balmer. And maybe the next week, join over 50% of your colleagues who are going to be on site in Las Vegas who have already begun participating in these activities. And then the next week, it was more than 75% of the folks who are going to be joining us next week have already consumed upwards of 80% of the content. And we learned from each occasion of the flipped classroom that the more structure we provided over that 4 week, 5 week window when the pre-work was available, then we went from, I think, having about 50 to 60% of the participants participate in the online series till the last time we ran this. We had upwards of 90% of the participants complete the full curriculum. So I knew when we walked in the room that 90 to 95% of the learners who were in front of me had completed the full curriculum, and I knew a lot more about each one of those learners. And it was that operational excellence that we developed over the 2 or 3 years of doing this that ensured us that we had the opportunity as educators to have that level of comfort.
And I think that that's an important point, because I know, you know, a lot of people who are listening to this may be saying, yeah, great idea, provide some content up front to kind of level set and make sure we're going to be able to get the most out of the classroom, but they'll never do it. You know, they're thinking, I can give this to my learners, prospective learners, but, well, A, you know, what happens in a lot of event-type situations, you know, where you're just coming to a conference, you don't even know who's going to show up in the room. So you really have no way to control that, you know, upfront interaction. So, you know, from an operational standpoint, you have to put into place a mechanism to be able to identify who's going to be in the room, you know, I'm assuming. But then, as you're saying, once you've done that, it sounds like, A, you need to be persistent in the communication, and B, it also sounds like you used, you know, a little bit of peer pressure there too. You know, others are doing this. It's that social proof thing. And we know they've been doing it, and it's contributing to the quality of the experience you need to be contributing to. So is that persistence and that kind of, you know, I guess, social proof, peer pressure, are those the two key components, or are there, you know, other parts of how you make sure that people are going to be, you know, willing and commit to participate?
You know, it's interesting that, and I don't think I can draw any causation from this. The first couple times we ran this, it was a pre-conference workshop, and people were paying upwards of $150 to participate in a five-hour workshop. But the communication with the original, our original stakeholders, our partners, the communication that they had to their members wasn't as strong, and we end up with 50 to 60% of folks doing the work. But it was pre-registrants. We knew who was going to be in the room. In fact, each time that we've run the flipped programs, it was a registration process. We knew who was going to be in the room. I've seen people try to run it where they're using the term flipped classroom. But imagine the time and energy that you're going to put in to not only create the content for that live meeting, but to create all of that content. And it has to be engaging. Mm-hmm. It has to be demonstrative of the experience that you're going to have in the online setting, or people could show up in that online experience, see one or two of the videos and say, I don't even need to go to that live meeting, or I don't want to go to that live meeting if this is the quality.
Right.
So you're opening yourself up as an educator to say, here's what we're going to do together. Now come on this journey with me. And so there is zero doubt in my mind, even before you start thinking about the data, just the structural pieces of a flipped classroom is going to require additional work from the educators, from the subject matter experts, and from the logistics team. And if you don't follow some of the best practices that we figured out, that we've published, and you do this extra work, and now you get to that live meeting, and 51% or 49% of the folks in the room have not done any of the prep work. Now, who are you obligated to serve in that room? The people who did the work and therefore want to jump into application and move to higher level thinking, or the 50% of the people who didn't do the work, but they paid. And now as an educator, you've not created homogeneity. You've not created a level playing ground. You've created a chasm.
Right. Now, that's a very important point. And I think, you know, you referenced earlier the sort of the money revenue question. I mean, the money revenue question is tied into impact and value ultimately. You know, you want to be doing things that that improve the learner's condition and the condition of all learners. And I know in the ANCC scenario, I mean, you did come out with, you know, very concrete data that showed that that you had an impact with what you were doing. And a lot of this is written up. And again, we'll link to the paper you did on this, because it's got a lot of the details around, you know, how you structured this, exactly what you did, the number of communications, how it turned out. But just, I mean, looking at some of the outcomes, and you may want to cite others, but I'm reading, for example, that after completion of each video, so, you know, these nurses viewed the videos that you provided, 55% of the learners stated that they were more confident with the topic or were ready to make changes in their practice, which I think that's particularly powerful. And that was out of, you know, getting close to 400 participants. So you changed a lot of people there with that. And then, you know, you note that at the event itself, 76% of the respondents claimed that by viewing the online series, they were better prepared to engage with the symposium faculty and to be more active learners. And most of them had viewed the series. You knew that. And they were more prepared as a result of it. So that, I mean, that's the kind of just really powerful impact data that you can get out of this. And as you said, you know you're not creating a chasm. You're actually leveling a playing field and upping the learning game significantly. And I don't know if there's other data that came out of it that, you know, struck you even more than those items. But I mean, it sounds like end of the day in this experience, and I know others you've had, you really have been able to move the dial by structuring this well and operationalizing it well.
The one additional data point that we learned in one of our earlier versions of the flipped classroom is that of the learners who engaged in the online series, and remember, they've got this 4 to 5 week window before they're traveling, before they're showing up in front of us in this flipped classroom, the learners who had participated in the video were twice as likely to have made a significant practice change prior to even getting to us.
Wow.
Right. So, Jeff, in the last 30 days, relative to the content within this program, have you made any significant changes in your practice? And those learners who went through these short video series and now they're starting to prep and they're going back to their practices, they're going back to their offices, and they've already got these ideas in their head about new ways of thinking and preparing for this live meeting. Mm-hmm. So they're in this, we're making the most of the availability bias, right? These are learners who in the front of their mind are almost for 4 or 5 weeks constantly thinking and filtering everything that they do in their offices through this new lens before they've even got to our applied workshop.
Right.
They're two times as likely to have made a change before they even got to us.
Right.
And so I don't think that's going to happen from giving them a couple things to read. I don't think that's going to happen from giving them some YouTube videos.
Right.
The other experience we had is the second time we did this, I'm on a plane about to land. I think the meeting is taking place in Vegas, and I'm stopped twice between the airport and the hotel convention center by people who said, "Dr. McGowan, are you the one who did the videos online?" So before my faculty and I have even gotten in the room, the learners through the video series that we've built now have recognition and familiarity with the thought leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Like people are stopping me in the airport saying, I just watched your video series. So now not only are we building homogeneity across the learners, but we're building familiarity and community across the faculty members, and now we start our live applied workshop.
That's great. Now, listening to this, I love the data. I love the impact. It does, though, obviously sound like, you know, a fair amount of work to do right. And I don't know, this may be too much to ask, you know, out of a short podcast, but if you had to, you know, trim it down, take a simple toe in the water approach, because I imagine a lot of folks are, you know, they're going to have to make the case for this. They're going to have to, you know, show some small amount of impact from having done this kind of thing initially to then be able to potentially take it to a different level. I mean, if you know, for example, that you've got a group of people coming to a particular session, whether it's a conference or whatever, you want to do just at least some simple level of flipping beforehand. I mean, you know, can you find a video, you know, that fits your field, or maybe make a relatively simple video, you know, put an assessment on the front end of it, an assessment on the back end of it, so that you can just see that, you know, the you have some idea of what the video has done for people, and then have them come to the session and I guess, you know, make sure that you're communicating enough ahead of time to make sure that people do actually participate in the video. It's something, is something that simple, do you think, within the reach of any organization to at least try out?
I do think so. I think you hit on a couple key points. Number one is recognize the resources that you have available to you and understand that there is a basement to what a true flipped experience is. So you want to give them content and you want to make sure that you can measure something about them. And that front piece is, it doesn't have to be that expensive, but it ends up taking more planning and thought. So the first time we did it, I asked each of the faculty members to sit in front of their webcams for 7 or 10 minutes and describe some theory or some approach that they've used. And then I would just edit the webcam videos down. The second couple times we did it, second few times we did it, we found that our faculty really struggled with webcam videos, editing them. They didn't feel comfortable. And so we went with slides and audio. And any of that is worth a shot, as long as you're collecting some information from the learners, and as long as you are over communicating to that audience,
right,
that that everyone's doing it, that you can learn together. The other key piece of this is when we got to the workshop, the first time we did it, it was a 4-hour workshop. The second few times we did it, it was a full 8-hour workshop. When we did the workshop, we would dedicate the first half an hour to 45 minutes of the workshop to a review, not of the content, but of what the community, all the learners, Jeff, you and the 149 other people in the room, what have you accomplished in the past 4 weeks? So let's look at the poll questions that we asked, and let's look at the assessment questions, and let's look at the resources that you viewed. And so we use the first half an hour to 45 minutes of the workshop to galvanize that community. This is what you did. Jeff, Salisa did this, and you did this, and Brian did this. So not only are we gaming through the outreach and the communication prior to the live meeting, but they know when they're in that room that they now get to see what everybody else has done. And so we're building a community. And, right. And for the 5 to 10% of the folks that are in the room that didn't participate, that's got to be a slightly uncomfortable experience, but maybe deserved.
Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, so that's kind of the really the goal there is to get that level of engagement around learning and to, you know, kind of turbocharge the learning experience. So, I mean, I think in general, you've got, I'm kind of summarizing what we've talked about here. I mean, you got to put some pre-content out there that actually has some honest to God true value to it. You need to do some form of measurement around that content to make sure that it's actually doing something for the folks that are using it. You need to communicate, you know, very persistently and persuasively around it to ensure that they're going to engage with it. And then, you know, you need to leverage that in the actual classroom environment once the people get there, so that, you know, you're really getting the full value out of having done that. So that might be sort of the four components, I guess, of a great flipped experience. Does that sound right from your perspective?
It sounds great. It really does. It sounds great. The reality is that you can do all that, and I've seen this done, where you can do all those pieces, and then your faculty have developed their live presentations 3 months earlier.
Not right, yeah.
Right, and so you've done all this. You've looked, you've provided value, you've measured, you've analyzed what the learners have done, and then you go to your live workshop and their presentations that your faculty members have canned 3 months ago, they're not flexible in what they're prepared to do. So I think the final piece of this is your faculty have to be made aware, you have to have buy-in that ultimately their presentations, the experiences that they're creating at that live meeting will not be finalized until 48 to 72 hours before that live workshop takes place, when you actually know from the learners what is or isn't working or where emphasis should be redirected. Right. And so what we did is, working with our faculty, say, okay, we're going to dig into this for 30 minutes at the beginning, but we're going to use the data to tell us what to do for the next 30 to 40 minutes. And maybe what we need is a deeper dive here or a clarification there. And so I'd say while the agenda for the live workshop is pretty much set, exactly how each of those sessions is going to be used, that probably won't be finalized until a couple days before the meeting. And so that flexibility, that the ability to use the data to create that individualized experience, that's probably my last tip.
Yeah. Okay. That's fantastic. And I'm going to, you know, we probably need to start winding down here. So I'm going to take a little change gears just a little bit here, but mostly just to reference the fact that, you know, we've been talking about flipped learning. That's very, you know, something you're very focused on in your work, but you are much more broadly, I think, focused around just how learning happens, what is effective from a learning standpoint. I wanted to be sure to note before we sign off that, you know, you've got your own budding podcast, The Science of CE, where you're really talking about, you know, the science behind learning. Everything we've been talking about here really is rooted in science. We haven't necessarily referenced all of the science around it, but that's something that, you know, you dig into deeply. And I want to make sure that folks are aware of that Science of CE podcast, and we'll definitely link to that in the show notes as well. But I've definitely enjoyed the episodes of that so far. I'm looking forward to more of it. So thanks for that effort. Maybe one last question before we actually exit here, though. We always like to ask this of anybody who comes on to the Leading Learning podcast, and that's, you know, your own lifelong learning habits. What do you do to make sure that you're going to keep learning, you know, or maybe, you know, to referencing back to, we've been talking about flipping, you know, if somebody hasn't architected a flipped experience for you as you're going into a learning experience, how do you make sure that, you know, you yourself are going to prepare well enough to get as much as possible out of any learning experience that you're engaged in?
That's a great, that last part is a great question, right? Do I take the ownership as a learner to get up to speed as much as possible? I just wonder if there's a payoff at any point. If I were to spend all this time trying to understand everything that I'm preparing to learn on site, and I'm the only one in the room, and I'm ready to dig into applied stuff, but the faculty members are teaching 101, that would, I imagine, frustrate me. I'm a big learning filter guy for the last 7 or 8 years. So I've set up a number of Google's search alerts, save searches. I've got maybe a half dozen PubMed save searches and a variety of other tools, Twitter streams and hashtags. And I probably dedicate about an hour, 90 minutes a week just to open my eyes to what my various nets have caught for me, whether it's lifelong learning on Google or whether it's the science of behavior change through some PubMed social psychology journals. I try to spend about 90 minutes a week, and usually it's in smaller 20-minute, 30-minute doses, just bringing in. But I don't have to go looking. It's very rare, once or twice a week maybe, do I actually have to search for something, because I years ago built these nets up for me, and then, you know, waiting for a meeting to start or something, I can flip on the phone or open up my tablet and look into any of the nets and see what's for dinner.
That's great. I do almost exactly the same thing myself, and I find it's one of the most valuable things I've ever done is set up those kinds of filters to be feeding the learning beast on a day-to-day basis. Well, Brian, you know, thanks so much. I know I kind of caught you on the fly for this podcast today, but was really excited about what you're doing with flipped learning. Again, Brian is going to be talking about flipped learning in one of our content pods at the upcoming Learning Technology Design event. So, you know, if you're listening and have been fascinated by what Brian is saying, that'd be a great place to connect with him in person. Brian, how else can people find out about you and connect with you?
Sure. Certainly through LinkedIn, Brian S. McGowan, and through Twitter, Brian S. McGowan. I'm more than happy to grow my personal network and learn from your network as well. Jeff, thank you for the invitation, and I look forward to seeing you in Arlington.
Great. Thanks so much.
So that wraps up our interview with Dr. Brian McGowan. Just a quick reminder again that we do have Learning Technology Design coming up May 18th and 19th in Arlington, Virginia. I do encourage you to check out the program available at ltd.leadinglearning.com, and hope to see you there.
To get show notes for this episode, which is going to include some great links to content we referenced during the interview, go to leadinglearning.com/episode29. And of course, while you're there, you'll see various options for subscribing to the podcast. If you have not subscribed yet and you're getting value out of the Leading Learning podcast, we'd be truly grateful if you would do that on iTunes or a podcatcher of your choice.
You would also make us exceedingly happy if you would take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. And to do that, you can go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes. We really do appreciate this, and it makes it a lot easier for other people to find this podcast.
And finally, word of mouth is a beautiful thing, and we would love for you to create some beauty by talking to others about the Leading Learning podcast, whether that's in the hallway, by the water cooler, or on a social media channel of your choice. And in fact, if you would like to tweet about the Leading Learning podcast, all you have to do is go to leadinglearning.com/share, and a tweet will be automatically generated for you that you can send out to your vast social network. Or if you prefer a network besides Twitter, just pick the one of your choice and send out the good word about Leading Learning.
So thanks again, and we'll see you next time on the Leading Learning podcast.